Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 1:11 PM, the Pacific Summer Time. Today is August 5th. Bonds today were a little softer, but we can clearly see on the 30-year, for example, that while the yield was up, it still has not broken the downtrend. So we're going to have to see additional follow-through to really signal that there is true reticence about continuing to pay up for bonds. One of the things that's been quite clear from a number of the conversations I've had in the last week is that investors are definitely coming around to the idea of substituting gold for bonds in portfolios. And gold did push on to new high ground in here today, but and I will return to that in a moment, but I think it's worth also looking at the TIPS yield, because that does continue to trend downwards, and it's this negative real yield environment which is one of the primary reasons behind the fact that investors are willing to look at gold now, because they really believe that there is no hope for making a return on investment in bonds. The Federal Reserve and central banks all over the world are way behind on meeting their inflation targets. They are going to leave interest rates at extraordinarily low levels for prolonged periods of time until they come anywhere close to reaching those targets. The fact that TIPS yields are continuing to compress regardless of other market activity, well, that is a clear indication that bond investors are just willing to are looking for a form of hedge against inflation. So gold is attracting those flows. The price today was up $18. It has cleared the 2000 level, but we cannot get away from the fact that it has accelerated to get to this level. It has not stopped going up. One thing that is one of the things that makes analyzing gold a little easier than some of the other asset classes is that it does tend to give clear signals. And when this advance has run its course, the signal will be quite clear. We're likely to see either a downside Q reversal or a very large downward dynamic, which will cap the peak in the short term. As I said, I've had a number of conversations in the last week where institutional investors, people who have historically been value investors and wouldn't dream historically of touching gold, are now allocating upwards of 5%. That's, I think, one of the more important figures that I've had a number of discussions, and it's that 5% figure has popped up on a number of occasions. So definitely people are willing to allocate in size to gold, but perhaps not to the same size that they would have historically, because historically an allocation of 10% to gold was considered normal. Well, we haven't been at that particular juncture in the markets for a long time, and this has been a spectacular advance so far. One of the things I think is important is that gold broke out more than a year ago. We had a first step above the base. We had a very significant pullback in March, and now we've had this really very impressive rebound where the price is now at 2037, but at the lows in March, it was closer to 1450. So we're closing in on a 50% advance in the space of only 5 months, and that's pretty spectacular by any standard, but particularly for an asset class like gold. Silver is only just breaking out. It's playing catch-up in a really quite impressive fashion right now, but in terms of timing, it has lagged significantly, and it really only completed its base formation 3 weeks ago. Of course, it has done spectacularly well in that very short period of time, and it's up to a new recovery high in here today. Now, that was a rather large period of volatility 2 Mondays ago. It held up the price for about a week, and now we've seen the clear upward break in here today. Well, this is now the first little consolidation following the breakout, and it would need to at least dip into it and potentially break down through it in order to signal a peak of more than short-term significance. So silver being high beta gold, it does tend to outperform gold by a substantial margin once investors come around to the idea that we are now in a new bull market. And That is the clear conclusion. This was also an interesting chart that I saw today, and it was the fact that Bank of America Merrill Lynch is looking at their internal private client ETF holdings, and they've only really just started to move up in the course of the last year, and they're still way below where they were a while ago. Now, what I think it's potentially important to look at is what that represents in terms of that ETF assets under management. So it could rise substantially to get up to 5%. Of course, we also know that the total assets of the ETF sector in gold continue to move higher. They're up to 108 million ounces. That's now higher than Germany's stockpile, and still below the USA's, but that is now the second largest holding of gold in the world. Well, if it's not being held in institutional or in the accounts of retail investors, it has been accumulated by institutional investors. When I spoke with Eric Sprott, who runs Sprott Asset Management, last autumn, he was of the opinion that they were seeing record inflows, and they were seeing interest coming through from a whole range of different kinds of people, certainly more of the traditional investor in gold, as well as some young people. Now, when we think about then the potential, there is still ample scope for gold to continue to rally over the course of the next few years. There's plenty of runway, and particularly if money starts to flow out of bonds and into gold as a hedge asset class. But it has done spectacularly well in the short term, and gold shares have been doing well, but they have not rallied in here today. In fact, they were a little softer and finished just about unchanged by the time it closed. But the big picture here is that gold miners in general have been have had discipline instilled upon them over the course of the bear market. We're just at the beginning of this breakout, and they still offer leverage to the gold price, so they should continue to do well. We're really, I think, just at the beginning of that exact same process in the energy markets. Devon Energy was up in a dynamic manner in here today and has confirmed at least near-term support around the $10 area on the back of a sale of some assets, the paying off of about 50% of the debt, and then a special dividend getting paid as well. It's that kind of return to a more sober way of managing the company is going to represent, it's really a sea change for the unconventional oil and gas sector, because they had been spending money in a really very aggressive manner in order to capture market share, try and produce as much as possible, show a use case for the technology, but of course they weren't paying much attention to profitability. And now that kind of discipline is being instilled upon them by the market. And of course, it is important to view it in the context of a downtrend that's been underway now for a decade. So the potential here is that there is recovery scope. Oil prices today were in positive territory, up about a dollar, and not quite able to hold all of the advance as it touched, or at least tried to touch, the 200-day moving average, but it has unwound all of the oversold condition, and there is still potential for additional upside. Of course, a lot is going to hinge on just how aggressive the stimulus package the USA eventually agrees upon is going to be. There is a wide divergence between how much they want to spend between the different parties, but the kinds of things they want to spend the money on are pretty much the same. So it's, I think, quite clear that there is going to be some form of additional stimulative action, and that is part of the reason why we continue to have this negative real yield environment, because the quantity of money that is getting thrown at this problem is profound. It does obviously make a clear case for why anyone would want to buy bonds when the quantity of those bonds is going to increase at practically an exponential pace. But as long as the Federal Reserve is willing to print the money necessary to buy them, then they're likely to be reasonably well bid. But what we also know is that during other periods of quantitative easing, we have seen yields rise. We haven't seen that yet. The fact that the 10-year yield has been completely inert is something that I think really bears watching. We're right back on the 50 basis point level. That was where the yield bounced from back in March. But these periods of inert trading do not last indefinitely, and when they end, we generally get much more volatile trading action. Now, when we then think about stock markets, well, the S&P 500 was in positive territory today, up about 0.5%. It's pulling away from this little range above the 3,200 point level. It has held the sequence of higher reaction lows from March. It consolidated above the trend mean. It's now pulling away from it. The next area of potential resistance is the peak from back in February, but it is looking much better supported now than it did back in May. So there is the clear scope here that we're going to see additional new highs. The Russell 2000 small caps have been underperforming for really quite some time, but they were up in a pretty dynamic manner in here today and pushing on to new recovery highs. It was really, I think, absolutely necessary that they find support in the region of the trend mean and then improve upon that performance, and we've seen that. This is really quite encouraging in terms of that kind of performance, because it does suggest that the wider economy is doing better. The regional banking index has steadied. It is underperforming in much the same way that banks everywhere are underperforming. And of course, there's a good reason for that as well, because it's very difficult for banks to make money when there are no interest rates. Of course, the fact that there are no interest rates is stimulating growth, and the NASDAQ continues to extend its uptrend. Now, we have seen a really quite profound advance, and it's been kind of quiet over the last 3 days, but it is holding the breakout. And we certainly have this sequence of ranges, one above another. I did think that this was an interesting chart in here today. It was the weighting of, it's I guess the single stock weighting of Apple in the S&P 500 has now exceeded that of IBM all the way back in the early 1980s. So there is obviously a clear dominance of performance and size of these extraordinarily large companies within the NASDAQ, and it is uniquely susceptible to any kind of weakness. Well, Apple has continued to accelerate higher, and the price has more than doubled since the low in March. It popped on the upside following earnings in the last week, and now it's pausing around the $450 area. But this has been an incredibly impressive performance. And then we have these runaway gaps that have arisen over the course of the last week. Now, if those gaps are closed, or if we get a downward dynamic, well, then it's going to mark a peak of at least near-term significance. And we do have a wide overextension relative to the trend mean, sitting at almost 50% right now. One thing that I do think is interesting about Apple in particular is, yes, it has got a fantastic franchise, and it has a dominant position among young people in the US in particular, although perhaps not a dominant position in the international handset market. But then you have the additional point that it has almost uniquely been extremely adept at juggling the demands of the US government and the Chinese government. Whereas they have outright refused to allow a backdoor into handsets in the USA on privacy grounds, it is hard to imagine that they have done the same thing in China. And in fact, the two-step that they've engaged in has been to say that they follow the laws of the countries they're active in. In other words, they are actively sharing data from phones with the Chinese government, and they have completely avoided any kind of criticism for that. And that's an incredible success on a propaganda front for Apple. And the share continues to do well on the back of that success, that they've been able to juggle the competing priorities of different governments internationally. It's an example of a company that has performed extremely well in whatever market it tends to move into. The question, of course, is where are the next trillion in sales going to come from? And that, of course, is a big question. Now, when we then think about the evolution of technology, well, one of the countries that is likely to benefit most from that is India. And the stock market index is now pausing around the 200-day moving average. When we look at, for example, Kotak Mahindra Bank, they have been named as one of the banks that is now creating a banking messaging system on the chassis of WhatsApp. Now, the share had trended higher in a reasonably consistent manner for the previous decade, and obviously then had this massive reaction against the prevailing trend, and now we have this period of right-hand extension. Now, it's quite likely to be a recovery, but it's going to have to sustain a move above the trend mean in order to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. Reliance Industries has also surged of late, and this again is another share that has just exploded on the upside following the hiatus in March, but it is pausing right now. Now, it's been a steep advance. It has been reasonably consistent though, and we haven't had a reaction of more than 200 rupees. So that's the minimum requirement to signal that we have a peak of more than short-term significance. And of course, it is by far the largest constituent of the Indian stock market. So it's certainly one to pay attention to. Tencent is among the biggest performers in China, and the share was in positive territory in here today and pushing on to test the highs within this range. And I think this continues to look like a bullish chart. The mainland market was reasonably unchanged in here today, and then we have the Hang Seng, which followed through on the upside following yesterday's upward dynamic. It hasn't quite yet broken the sequence of lower rally highs, but it is looking increasingly likely that it will be able to do that. Now, when we think about what are some of the tailwinds for emerging markets, it's got to be the dollar. And the euro was in positive territory in here today, but there's still some reticence to push it through the 120 area. I think it is more likely than not that we're going to see some consolidation here. But it has clearly broken the two-year downtrend. So that's little or some scope for consolidation is likely to be all that we see, because there is the clear intention by the USA to spend their way out of trouble with money they don't have, and they are engaging in much more aggressive policies to achieve those goals than anywhere else. And the primary victim of that suite of strategies is likely to be the dollar. It's also one of the facts that is helping gold and also helping stock markets generally. But then when we think about the Dow Gold ratio, well, we have got, I think, an interesting phenomenon, because it has completely broken the previous consistency. And now it is breaking down to new reaction lows. So gold has been trending higher relative to the Dow for 2 years already, and there is a clear sequence of lower rally highs. It's quite potentially possible that we're going to see continued downside, and that is likely to correspond with continued outperformance of gold relative to the stock market. Of course, gold has done particularly well against the Dow. So I think it's also interesting to look at how well it has done versus the Nasdaq as well, because we have this same pattern of outperformance of gold relative to the Nasdaq since 2018. It just hasn't been as pronounced, but gold is certainly doing better than a number of shares within the Nasdaq, and gold shares have done better than the Nasdaq 100 since March. So there is the potential here that what we have, the cyclicality in the market over the last century has been broken because of the buildup of debt. We had peaks in 1929, 1965, and 1999, and that's approximately 35 years between each of the peaks in the ratio. It would have been reasonable to conclude that the next peak would have been in 2035 or 2034, and that is just not the case. The consistency of the trend has been completely broken. Now, that means then that either the constituents of the ratio no longer have the same relationship, or they no longer represent the same things for the global economy as they did in previous cycles, which is, I think, a legitimate argument. But then we also have the point that the quantity of debt that's outstanding and the run-up in deficits that has no comparison outside of World War time, well, that's a unique situation which is affecting the valuations of everything, and it has completely disrupted the cyclicality of the interplay between equities and commodities. So we are seeing commodities outperform. They are not only pricing in the potential for a green energy revolution, a green renaissance, or the clear potential for infrastructure development, but they're also starting to price in inflation. So nickel today was up in a dynamic manner and now clearly pulling away from the region of the trend mean. Copper prices have been consolidating below the $3 area, but were just about positive in here today as well. This continues to look like a consolidation. Then there are obviously these still pressure in terms of the expectation for renewed demand in emerging markets, because they have not quite yet been able to get control of the virus. But it doesn't mean that we won't get more demand coming through later. The Nasdaq Biotech Index continues to hold the breakout from the peaks back in 2015. This looks like a new bull market. The use cases and the permissioning process for new drugs is potentially at least going to be revolutionized as a result of the response to the coronavirus, and that is a potential good news story, particularly if the vaccines are safe. And considering the fact that the liability that companies have for the vaccines they produce has been waived, it's rather vital that we do see a very clear public information campaign to convince people that they are safe. Moderna is still trending higher, and I think some of the other companies have stolen their thunder. Novavax, which has had a massive sawtooth profile over the entire course of its history, where there is initial enthusiasm followed by disappointment, but it has done spectacularly well over the course of the last while, but it wasn't quite able to hold on to all of its gain in here today. There is a lot of competition out there for vaccines. There are likely to be a number of different potential solutions, and there's the potential, at least, that some of these companies are not going to be able to get the price that they require in order to make sustainable profits. So it is likely to be a flash-in-the-pan type bull market for some of these very small companies, whereas some of the bigger companies are likely to see the benefits of the technology innovation that has allowed a solution to be delivered in less than a year. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.